The North Forker podcast is brought to you by Sherry Winter Parker of Corcoran. Sherry is the North Fork's number one real estate agent and top producer from 2005 to 2023. And welcome to the North Forker Stories podcast, where you'll learn about the wonderful people, places, and things that make the North Fork of Long Island a special place. My name is Lee Meyer, managing editor of North Forker, and this week I am joined by special guests Amy Zavato, editor-in-chief of Lifestyle at Times Review Media Group, and contributor Sal Veglica, who wrote the excellent feature, The Ultimate Locapore Bar Cart, for our April issue. Sal, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about the story.
Yeah, definitely. And Amy, this is your first time on the North Forker Stories podcast, despite being the editor-in-chief of Lifestyle here at Times Review. How are you?
Isn't that crazy? I'm great. I'm so excited to be talking about this topic that I spent about 20 years writing about. So yeah.
I mean, my first question is what, and you can both answer this, what is locapore?
Well, I think it's a truncated way of saying spirits that are made locally and in Eastern Long Island, and even a little bit further up, but for our purposes here, Eastern Long Island has so many exciting and really delicious spirits that are being made either in proper standalone distilleries, as side projects from winemakers or brewers, even collaborations, cool, funky projects like Matchbook Distilling, fully farmed projects like Sagaponack Distilling, who are a sixth-generation farm who have been using their own homegrown product to like distill. It's like there's so much. It's amazing. But that's a very long way of answering your locapore question, Lee.
Well, as you said, it's very expansive, right? It's a broad term. So, Sal, how did you go about reporting this story?
Well, I think the idea came to me selfishly because even though I'm a native Long Islander, I have really not much use for wine. I don't really drink it. I don't enjoy talking about it. I'm not a red or white guy. I might have some rosé every now and again. So when I heard that farms were making stuff that I would actually drink, it got me really excited to cover the story, and it surprised to see how many farms on the East End were getting involved in this. And not only that, but how many of the farms were distilling locally. The stuff is, for the most part, not being distilled out of state or even upstate. It's all being sort of distilled here. So it really is as local can be, as local as the wine that we're sort of famous for. So that's an interesting sort of premise for me as someone who is not really on the North Fork to drink a lot of wine. They're drinking some other stuff now.
Were there any spirits that you discovered along the way that you were a big fan of?
Yeah, for some of them, Matchbook, as Amy mentioned, had some really unique takes on the stuff that they're distilling. A lot of farms are generally distilling stuff from what they grow, right? It just seems like a natural fit. Matchbook, you know, was taking interesting tubers and making spirits out of that. And in one case, they were going down a route to try to make a beer, but then realized that license wouldn't let them. So instead of essentially throwing out the batch, they sort of tweaked it. And from a ginger beer, we got their Bugle cocktail in a glass, which is a nice twist. And some of the other farms, most of the other farms, like some of the vineyards and Sagaponack, as Amy mentioned, are turning crops that they would normally grow and try to sell into another revenue stream, which I think is important. I think a lot of these farms struggle. So if they can bring in another revenue stream, it's an important way to sort of keep them afloat. And they're not doing it by you know, necessarily growing stuff they wouldn't normally sell, which is Stegoponic, obviously famous for making potato vodka. They have other grains that they grow on the farm that they turn into spirits. So I think it's important to note that they're not growing stuff that wouldn't normally do well here just to make a spirit. They're, in essence, whatever would grow there, they're turning it into spirit. You know, it, down to rhubarb. I mean, they had a pretty robust patch of rhubarb, and they turned that into a spirit. So you can almost make anything into a spirit.
And Amy, you're a lifelong East Ender. You are a career-long drinks writer. Yes. How have you seen this evolve on the East End over the years?
That's a great question. Well, you know, I think a lot of it, you could even see it in tandem across the country, because, you know, state liquor laws are individual, and a lot of so many things kind of, it's like there was a reset button during Prohibition, and everybody was like, okay, I guess we're not allowed to drink it anymore or make anything, at least not in public. But around 2006, in New York State, the laws altered favorably so that people could start actually making spirits on premises and selling them, which was the other problem. So, you know, in some, like if you had a winery, you couldn't also have a still, and it was like a separate thing. And then there was also, if you were making it, you couldn't sell it on premises. So it made it really, really difficult and quite frankly, cost prohibitive in, to do these things. Since those laws began changing, you know, in the early aughts, it's just steamrolled. You know, you see everything from, as Sal mentioned, you know, using like a long time crop to do something else with it, as we watch so many of our farms dwindle and trying to find a way to keep them robust and still part of our landscape in Eastern Long Island, to people who, Rich DeBiele of Long Island Spirits, who really was such a pioneer on Long Island. He was the first, I think, in Eastern Long Island, or certainly one of the first, but I think he might have been the first. And I don't believe Rich was a farmer before he started doing this, but he just started using local rye to make whiskey and local potatoes to make Long Island vodka, live vodka, which kind of put him on the map. From there, it's just become such a fun thing. I feel like every time I turn around, I see a new product from a winery, like brandy being made over at Sparkling Point, or one woman, you know, making spirits for a few years now, or delicious vermouth coming out of Channing Daughters, you know, just all of these cool projects that have, you can pretty much go to any town and find something out here at this point. It's great.
I know, you know, for myself, I go into Bricks and Rye, which is also featured in this issue, of course, ask Evan what he's got new. And, you know, one of my favorite spirits from Matchbook Distilling is the Strawberry Amaro. Both of you guys, what is your favorite either spirit or cocktail that you've created or that you tasted on this journey?
Good question. I'm kind of traditional, so I would say anything that would fit into Manhattan is right for me. So I think a lot of the stuff coming from Field and Sound is very tasty and right up the alley. That's a popular spirit for folks to get into. That was certainly one of my favorites. Yeah, I mean, this wasn't a difficult story to get behind. I mean, certainly the folks chatting with me were great and very passionate about it and willing to spend some time with me on the phone. But then also the quote-unquote research was a lot of fun.
I love it because it's such an oddball, but it actually, for an oddball liqueur, it really is super versatile. I love Sagaponic Distilling's Farm Distillery's rhubarb liqueur. I use that as a modifier in Manhattans. I use it in other sort of classic cocktails that you might want to just sort of sub out something and try something else, whether it be a vermouth or grenadine, or like anytime I need something like that, I might kind of sub in that rhubarb liqueur, because it's not, for a liqueur, it's not super sweet. And if you like things a little on the drier side, I think it's a really fun thing to play with. I love their straight bourbon. I think it's really delicious. Just such a great either sipping or mixing. You know, you can kind of go any way. And I think it runs around $70. So sipping is probably a little better for $70 than mixing. But I just love sipping on Channing Daughters' myriad vermouths that they make seasonally. They're so fun and different and special. And that's pretty cool. Oh, and Matchbook Distilling Sunchoke Spirit. It tastes just like a funky mezcal, and it's really cool. And how fun that we can have something like that on Long Island. Sorry, I like everything.
That's great. No, absolutely. So one of the things that I think is also really interesting is we found a gorgeous bar cart from Touch Goods in Southold. Why did we pick this bar cart? You guys, I don't know who wants to answer that one, but it's a beautiful kind of sleek piece of furniture. Like
everything at Noreen Pinocchio's store, Touch Goods in Southold, is beautiful. Like you go in there and you're just kind of like, oh, I want this and I want this and I want this. And she was so nice. And she let us just, you know, photographer Doug Young and me come in there and just take over. And we were like, can we use this? Can we use this? Can we use that? And she just let us like go crazy, and which it's easy to do there. But that bar cart, like, I don't know, Sal, like to me, like I liked how kind of clean it is. I love the wooden wheels on it. I think they're really fun and kind of playful. And I just think it's like the kind of thing that if you walked into somebody's house, you'd really notice it. And it kind of feels very like, you know, if something can feel kind of Eastern Long Island, it's kind of got that vibe to me. I love it.
I think it feels light. It feels airy. It doesn't have the wheels, which almost kind of makes it look almost like a toy. I think I've seen so many bar carts that are sort of reminiscent of what maybe my grandparents would have had, like wicker and heavy and not used very often. This thing is stunning enough where if for some reason you ran out of spirits, you could just put a potted plant on and it will look just as fine. So you might be able to just pour some books on it. It's a conversation piece. So whether or not you are imbibing, it's something that is going to spark somebody's attention who may not have seen it before. This thing usually sits in her window. I'm pretty sure, and she gets a lot of comments from passersby.
Yeah, we shot it in the window. Mm-hmm. The light was so beautiful. It was great.
Thank you guys so much for chatting about this really interesting story. North Forker April issue is still on stands around the East End. Sal, would you like to plug any social media, any upcoming projects you'd like our readers to know about?
Sure. Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram. I'm most active there at Sal Magliga. And I usually post a lot of my stories that have been published or that I'm working on.
And Amy is, of course, the editor-in-chief of Lifestyle here. But Amy, would you like to plug anything?
You know, we have some great events coming up, Lee, don't we? We have South Forker Taste of West Hampton Beach event coming up on June 15th, I believe. And then we have our Taste of the North Fork, right? That's going to be coming up.
We sure do. I just got to find the dates.
Right, July.
Yeah, 1 second.
So excited about that. And please come to our websites, northforker.com and southforker.com, and see all the cool stuff that Lee and I are doing and all of our wonderful writers and super talented photographers, writers like Sal here, who is a very valued member of our team. And yeah, just, you know, come hang out with us. We have a lot of fun.
Definitely. Well, thank you guys for listening to North Forker Stories. Check back next week when we kick off our May issue coverage. And we look forward to hearing from you again soon, Sal. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was fun.
Take care, guys.